this is Jules.
And this is Kim.
And we're the Presets. You're listening to CITR on
101.9. That was smooth.
And welcome back to Stranded, the Australian Canadian Music Show on CITR 101.9 FM and online wherever you are. Thanks so much for listening. This is now part two of my special on The Church. They're an extraordinary band from Australia that many years into their career are still putting out wonderful music that has a real transcendent quality, a band that's actually getting better as the years go by. And last week, we heard part one, Sarah Lapsley's interview with Steve Kilby, the lyricist, songwriter, poet, and painter. And this week is part two, and my interview with Peter Koppus, who is the guitarist, or one of the two guitarists from the band. Next week will be Marty Wilson Piper. And the Peter Koppus Marty Wilson Piper guitar combo is one of the world's great enduring duos, I guess, with that real great back and forth, the intuitive fire of Marty Wilson Piper and the really precise technique, I guess, of Peter Koppus. Peter Koppus is a lifelong musician, and he comes from a musical family. And we're going to learn all about Peter's past today in our interview, his influences, what he currently does. He's doing, of course, numerous projects, including teaching. We're going to be learning all about Peter's teaching of the guitar that he does for students on the Sunshine Coast in Queensland, and his ideas about Australian music and some of his influences. He believes the bands that listeners should check out here in North America who may not be as familiar with the history of Australian music. So there's a lot to pack into the show. So let's start with a track, a Peter Koppus track from a Church album. The song is called As You Will, and it is from the Heyday album that came out in 1986. Last week we played the song Columbus from that album. So let's go back to 1986 with the Peter Koppus track As You Will.
To Become a friend of CITR and receive great discounts at businesses around Vancouver.
Your Friends of CITR card will get you discounts on Main Street at Antisocial Skateboard Shop, Devil May Wear,
Woo Vintage,
The Kiss Store, Lucky's Comics, Neptune Records, Red Cat Records, The Regional Assembly of Text, RX Comics, Temple of the Modern Girl,
Flaming Angels Boutique,
and the Wallflower Modern Diner.
It pays to be a friend of CITR. To find out more, come visit us in room 233 of the sub on UBC campus, or visit us online at citr.ca.
And you just heard there the Peter Coppers track from the Church album Heyday, and the track is called As You Will. And this is, of course, part two of my three-part special on the Church over 3 different weeks. Last week was Steve Kilby, the feature, and this week is a guitarist and multi-instrumentalist, Peter Coppers, and he was a real pleasure to talk to because of his extraordinary depth of knowledge about music and about rock and roll history. And we start off the special with asking Peter about the Church's connection to Canada, their previous tours here, and Peter speaks in glowing terms of a Canadian musical icon. And I actually wanted to just start for a bit of context for newer listeners of the band. Any experiences you might have had in Canada in years past? I know back in the late 80s, at least Under the Milky Way got into the Canadian Top 100. And did you manage to tour here, or do you have any memories or experiences or connections with the Great White North?
Quebec really blew me away how amazing that was. When we went there just recently, actually, maybe a couple of years ago, we did a festival in Quebec, and I was really impressed with the beauty of that city, and had like a European, very strong European thing. Ottawa, I remember once back in the 80s, we, on a very snowy night, we ended up in Ottawa, and I think, yeah, we did a great show there in a little club. Montreal, we were there, and I think it really, pretty sure that's where Leonard Cohen comes from, and you'll see one of my greatest inspirations.
Yeah, I'm just reading a biography about him right now, his character.
A couple of great DVDs, and one of my favourite ones is when he's being interviewed by a TV journalist or whatever about, and asks him, how does he write songs? And I don't know. Ridiculous, you know. I think I've always had an interesting view of his view of the possibilities that journalists, you know, very hard to explain some things to them. Leonard Cohen, that, now there is a legacy that's a great inspiration for us, that a guy can go around playing theatres all his life and then suddenly the world realises how significant and important an artist he is and has been, and he's playing, you know, massive entertainment centres around the world and making them feel an intimate, you know, environment with a humble performer on stage.
Mm.
And strangely, it was because his career has been buoyed always by cover versions of his songs done by other people. Like, first we take Manhattan, that was actually covered by a girl that got the interest for him, for his album.
Ah.
I'm not sure who it was, but it was a girl who did that. And then, of course, Jeff Buckley did Hallelujah.
Mm-hmm.
And that was probably a song from an album at his lowest period of his career. And that's secured his whole future. I believe that you can attribute his success to that. Now, we need someone to do a cover of one of our songs, maybe, to be recognised.
There must be a few covers of Under the Milky Way out there.
Well, actually, there was one by Sia, who's an Australian artist who lives in New York, and she, her version was used on a massive American television advertising campaign for Lincoln Town Cars. They took the line, and it's something quite peculiar as the motto for this new Lincoln Town Car, which was not your typical limousine. And and that exposure didn't contribute anything to our attendances, believe it or not.
I often tell people about, well, the Donnie Darko soundtrack, and they go, oh, that's right, that song, that's how a lot of people in North America maybe now might have got a second second win from
that's
the band.
That's absolutely right. Now, when we were talking about the generational thing before, that generation has dropped off now. There's a new generation coming through. Like, I teach school kids, sometimes high school kids, just as a bit of a favour for a few of the local high schools around here. And I, you know, ask them, have you, you know, to blow my trumpet and say, well, I'm, you know, from the church and we have been on Donnie Darko, and they go, huh? So that generation now has dropped away, that the new generation don't even know who Donnie Darko is. We might find it harder and harder to get an audience. But actually, we've got this orchestral event. If we come to North America, it'll probably be, you know, with a huge entourage of 70 orchestral musicians, such as what we played at the Sydney Opera House with, and we could be conquering heroes yet. We haven't lost faith at all.
I'm certainly optimistic about many great more years for the church.
Yeah, it's almost as if everything was a trajectory towards that point, and that, and we should travel around the world with an orchestra for the rest of time, and we'd all be very happy with that. It was like having a not a supercharger, it's like having this huge power behind you. It's incredibly uplifting and rich in emotion, having orchestral instruments, you know.
Listen, if they're so hot, how come they're not tearing up the charts, babe?
Because you never play them, babe.
At CITR, our hosts choose the music they play. That means our charts actually reflect the tastes of music lovers, as opposed to focus groups. So if you want to know what's really tearing up the charts, get your hands on a copy of Beatroot or Discorder magazine, or go online to CITR.ca. CITR's charts are based on actual spins motivated by actual preference. No payola, no marketing, just good tunes. Refreshing, no?
Stranded, the Australian Canadian Music Show, is my way of contributing to the eclectic mix of tunes here on the radio, and I play what I know, and I'm getting to know the Church pretty well. I've been a fan for a number of years and have been fortunate to meet the band and conduct three interviews so far. Hopefully it'd be great to get Tim the drummer, but so far three interviews with Steve, Peter and Marty, and today you're listening to the interview with Peter Coppice, guitarist, multi-instrumentalist and music teacher. You're going to hear in this next part a little bit about Peter's work that he does on the Sunshine Coast teaching people guitar and what he gets out of that, and it's quite an inspiring listen. So let's press on with the next part of the Peter Coppice interview. I know you divide your time between touring with the Church, recording albums, and also teaching. I'm curious about if teaching music has become somewhat of a passion for you, and what you might think about adult learning, people getting into music who may not have had the influence early in life, and how you've seen people really stick with it, with your influence.
Yeah, well, people are the interesting thing for me, probably, and anybody, probably human beings. So to be teaching them music is a particular insight into people, myself, and the people who created this magnificent music, because I usually teach people things that they recognise, and not many of them have know all of the Church catalogue. Yeah, the older students have been very interesting. I've had some 60-year-old guys who, one, he said he's got fired by one guitar teacher, and I started teaching him what he wanted to learn, rather than forcing him to learn something that, you know, like a curriculum. And he learned about three chords, and then he started writing songs. He's written about 40 songs now. He still can't really play guitar very well. And the same as the other 60-year-old guy, he he's in his 60s, he ended up writing a song, and he's from New Zealand, and he wrote a song for the Christchurch victims of the earthquake there. Actually clipped some videos together and put it up on YouTube, and he still hasn't really become I played the guitar on it and helped him kind of record, and he learned to record, learned to sing in time, and you know, write songs and lyrics and that before he even learned to play guitar, and I was supposed to be teaching him guitar. Now, unhappy with the results, of course.
Yeah, that's extraordinary.
So that's the thing, that if there's an addiction in teaching, it's just, and the rewarding teaching is the sharing and the appreciation of the sharing.
But it's always interesting to think about the history and the music, context of the music, and maybe, you know, the legacy that someone like yourself has left behind, and maybe they want to contribute to that as well.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting generational thing at this moment. Being a teacher, to say, you get a real insight to people, culture, the world. You know, I get turned on to a lot of young bands and new bands that kids are into, which I really appreciate, you know. But I teach old school. That's what I tell them. I say, like, the 60s, and you want to learn guitar, the 60s and the 70s were the times when the best guitar, well, not necessarily the best, but some of the most iconic guitar parts were, you know, created, and you'd have songwriting guitarists. So I teach them, it feels like I'm making a concession all the time to teach them Jimi Hendrix, Jimmy Page, Ritchie Blackmore and Pete Townsend, Bob Dylan, you know, who's a really great guitarist, believe it or not. John Lennon, one of the greatest guitarists as well, actually.
Really?
And I teach them from a songwriting point of view. But I'm always kind of reassuring them these are the roots of their own modern-day heroes.
Exactly. And actually, I'm reading the Keith Richards biography right now. And have you read that one?
I've read that. You know, what's really shocked me, though, is that everyone I talk to about it seems to have strangely not remarked about the same things that I think are incredibly remarkable and historic, iconically significant to the rock and roll culture and the world, you know, that it was affected by it, you know, the cultural thing, you know, like the People versus Larry Flint thing, when Keith told the judge that he was an old man, petty moraled person, and got 12 months jail for contempt of court. Guy had heroin, got 6 months, and that was the downfall of the British justice system in the eyes of the youth and the media, and then went on through the world pretty much.
It's just great to learn about this rock and roll history, and interestingly, I've noticed that you play in a covers band, a psychedelic covers band, so you're actually playing a lot of these old songs to folks in the Sunshine Coast every now and then?
Yeah, as a drummer. And my first instrument, apart from a Hammond organ, which was my introduction to music, being a musician, I had access to one for about a month in my house as my father's keyboard player was moving house. And that's I had access to all other instruments, but I never really took them up until the Hammond organ came. And it's an interesting thing, because I believe my guitar playing style is based on the sound of a Hammond organ. In fact, I even used a Hammond organ speaker box in Gold Afternoon Fix and thereafter.
Oh, wow.
A Leslie rotating speaker, which they used a lot in the 60s as well. Once you hear one, you go, oh, that's that sound. They used to sing through them. They play pianos through them.
Oh.
It was pretty much the only effect device they had in the 60s. They didn't have phasers or overdrives or anything. The only thing they had was a Leslie speaker box to put a different sound on their recordings. I started playing drums after the Hammond organ went away, because my father bought me drums, and I had become a taught drummer and learnt Latin American rhythms. And which is what I realised, the Ringo beat from the Beatles, John Ringo had Latin training, I'm sure, to develop the beat. And so I learned to play guitar from being in bands, playing as a drummer. And now I love playing the 60s music as a drummer, because I actually study the arrangements and that from behind the kit as we're, reflecting on these songs. And it's a tribute band, you know. We really do great justice to the songs and the arrangements.
Here for now. Here for now. An island coincidence away. Boarding a train, always leaving today. Approaching a station starts too slow. Ushered out, no wheel against the flow. Dark as the night comes to shade, with stars in her head and grand majestic blade. Rises from the crowd. Here for now. Here for now. Tugging the sound as if to say, is left a part of now and yesterday. Hurry for fear to miss the show. Not as strong as the winds eternal blow. Dark as the night comes to shade, with stars in her head and grand majestic blade. Rain, the world passes by, with the sound of a young girl's sigh. Men carrying a bride, smoke rises from the crowd.
Thinking about studying a diploma, undergrad, or postgrad degree overseas? Or how about volunteering or working abroad? Language travel? Adventure travel? If you answered yes to any or all of these, you should check out the Study and Go Abroad Fair, Tuesday, October 4th from 12 to 6 p.m. at the Vancouver Convention Center. All attendees will be entered into a grand prize draw. Universities and colleges from around the world will be on hand to talk to interested students. To register and learn more, visit studyandgoabroad.com.
And this is Stranded, the Australian-Canadian Music Show, and my second part of the Church special, talking with Peter Koppus. And the song you just heard there was a Peter Koppus song on a Church album. The album is called Golden Afternoon Fix, and the song is Transient. You just heard Peter there talking about his teaching career that he does up in the Sunshine Coast in Queensland when he's not very busy with church projects and solo work. Next is Peter talking about Australian music, the bands that have influenced him and other members of the church, and a few little curiosities, including the little story that I've already talked about previously about the Australian Crawl song from 1982 called Unpublished Critics that sounds eerily familiar to a Guns N' Roses song. And it came out a long time before that Guns N' Roses track, so there's a little bit of mystery and intrigue about how that song could be so similar in form and structure and melody. So Peter's going to talk a bit about that. I'm not going to do the comparison today. I've done that at another show. If you go to my blog, go to Google and type OZSTRANDED, OzStranded. Go to the playlist for March 7th, 2011, and I talked about this Australian Crawl song and played it with the Guns N' Roses track. And Peter's going to talk about this in the next section, and also other interesting Australian bands that I recommend, and he recommends, you check out. We had a conversation in Seattle. We were speaking about some great Australian bands, or maybe more under-the-radar bands, and again, for context, I wonder if you could tell the listeners a bit about some of your contemporaries maybe at the time you were forming the church in Sydney and other great Australian bands that people might not be aware of here in North America.
Well, probably the most significant song historically, not saying this is a good song or anything like that, but one of the most interesting things is this song called Unpublished Critics by a band called Australian Crawl, and it's the second song on their second album, released in 1982, I think. And I think I might have played it to you, and you, as everybody else I've ever played it to, is really shocked that it actually is Sweet Child of Mine by Guns N' Roses. And
yeah.
That their chorus or refrain goes, it's just a matter of time. And most people associate that as, with Guns N' Roses as one of the great later rock supergroups. And they of the 90s, you know.
Mm.
And the verse and the chorus and even the intro guitar solo is so distinctly the same song that I thought that was quite remarkable. As far as music was a great inspiration for me, I'd say, and this was mentioned actually at the ARIA Hall of Fame speech, that both Steve and I were heavily influenced by a song called The Real Thing, produced by a guy called Molly Meldrum, who's gone on to be one of the most famous world-famous interviewers, you know, friend of the stars. And he was an editor or publisher for a teen magazine, or rock magazine. In those days it was just a pop music magazine, and he did this 6-minute psychedelic epic that the record company thought was ridiculous to release. It was by a guy called Russell Morris, although the song was written by another guy called Johnny Young, who went later on had his own TV show as well. And eventually it was released, and it went to number one within the charts. And it's been a real, probably a inspiration, I suppose, to us to stick to our guns of, you know, artistry and music. Well, did you say that you have, like, from some Australian bands that are understated? Like, gave you some of the other bands, like, that are worth hearing, like Masters Apprentices is one of the most important bands that influenced me in Australia. Oh, the other thing is, I was just looking up Hush, this Australian band called Hush, and they were actually predated Kiss and were a big influence on Steve and I as far as, like, the glam rock thing, you know? Almost wonder if, well, you know, we're into New York Dolls and stuff like that, as they were, but, yeah, it was a very... They had two Asian guys, you know, on bass and guitar, who really extreme, like Kiss, I suppose. They predated Kiss. Yeah, and of course, there was, I think I told you about a band called Spectrum.
Yeah.
Realised that they were actually a New Zealander band. And a lot of New Zealand bands came out across the Tasman, as they call it, Tasman Sea, and up the ante in Australia, with probably a little bit more, like, you know, how Crowded House have that. And Split Enz had a more of an artistic, poetic approach to their music. Yeah, so New Zealand bands had a strong effect on the development of Australian bands.
How about actual, like, when you were first gigging in Sydney, like, contemporaries, yeah, actual bands that maybe you played with in whatever scene you might have been part of, is there any that stick out in your mind?
In excess, of course. Like, anybody who ever saw Michael Hutchence for a second realised that the guy had the massive star potential of, like, you know, he was, you know, your modern-day Mick Jagger, wasn't he?
Yeah.
There was a New Zealand band called My Sex who supported Talking Heads, this My Sex band was... they were both based on Ultravox. Obviously, the inspiration was Ultravox, that's where they took their name from. They were a really significant band at our time, contemporaries of us. But the most important one, of course, was a band called Ice House, or originally called Flowers, and the keyboard player from that band actually performed in my band, The Well, on the Water Rights album. And they were the band that inspired me the most to start The Church, in fact.
Oh, wow.
So probably my favourite Australian band. You know, temporarily, you'd see them and you'd be completely intoxicated by their music, instead of, like, it had a different feeling. You were immersed in their music, and in a way, like, a, you know, intoxicated is the only way I can describe it. Inspired me to start The Church. Up to that point, I didn't think Australia had kind of interest in music like that I was probably really wanted to make and that I listened to. There was another band, of course, Midnight Oil, at the same time in Australia, that inspired me.
So it's a real treat to listen to Peter talk about musical history, and especially some of the lesser well-known songs from Australia. But of course, a very well-known song is that Russell Morris track that Peter spoke about. And I thought I'd just play that for you now. Listeners, this was huge in Australia in the 60s and a big influence on the music of The Church. So let's play this song, The Real Thing, and then a track by Peter Coppice from his solo work.
Come and see the real thing, come and see.
So we're back here on Stranded with the Church Special, and we heard there two tracks. Firstly, an influence on Peter and the Church, the Russell Morris 60s hit The Real Thing, an Australian classic, and that was followed by an incredible song there by Peter Coppice and The Well, Peter's solo project, and that song is called Peak to Peak, and it came out in 1991 on the EP Iridescence. So there's actually a lot of Peter Coppice solo work out there to track down, and of course volumes and volumes of material that he's put out with the Church. Speaking of the Church, let's play now the very last section of the interview where Peter talks about the legacy of the Church. It's a good way to end at least this part of the special, talking a bit about the Church's longevity and things like that. So here it is. This is the final part of my interview with Peter Coppice, guitarist, songwriter and multi-instrumentalist of the Church. You're one of the bands that have stuck around the longest and continue to make incredible music. I wonder if you could reflect on how you feel you've played a part in any
contribution to the longevity.
To the longevity, yeah.
I would say, reflecting on the band, the Church, if the Opera House concert we just did made me and Marty realise that he plays bass on quite a few songs now. Steve plays guitar on some. I play piano, and as well as, you know, guitar, mandolin, and I'm a drummer. Marty's played drums on Church records, like Maya is one in particular. Ionian Blues, I think he might have played drums on that. But quite a few songs. And Tim actually plays a bit of guitar that you wouldn't realise, you know, like the solo in Operetta, which is kind of a trumpet solo, but he played that on keyboard, but he also plays bits and bits of pieces of guitar all over, just little bits and pieces, because he's not a terribly proficient guitarist, but he's very musical. And that's probably the point of it. I think we're all really musical. We have a variety of talents in being able to play a lot of instruments. I'm trying to play a bass recorder at the moment, such as the beginning of Ruby Tuesday and Stairway to Heaven. I'm actually having more difficulty doing that than any other instrument I've ever attempted. Yeah, but maybe there's what's reflected in that is our search for beyond what we're have done in the past. We're always looking for new things, which we think is an obvious thing, but it can be a curse in the sense that every time we do an album, everyone, you know, we go out and tour, and people say, "Oh, I loved the last album," you know, and it takes them like 2 years to catch up. But I would venture to say our greatest secret weapon at the moment is the last 10 years of albums since Priest Equals Aura. You know, we've made more albums since then than we did before, and the majority of the ones from, especially the Hologram of Baal, from there on, were really mature music that we'll think will be a great legacy of the Church and any musician aspiring to having a career that doesn't peter out, excuse the expression, like Pink Floyd and the Rolling Stones. And everyone say, "Yeah, but they're really successful bands." But I think they're actually cover bands of their own material. And I think they should have cease and desist orders about making records, because they are destroying the legacy that would mean that bands could actually get better as they get older.
I guess
in Arab countries, you have to be 45 before you're allowed to perform.
Yeah.
I heard that in Morocco. I'm not sure how true that is, but it's a respectable art, music, in the East, whereas in the West it's become a circus. And we find it hard to exist in that, not from just from our own distaste for the music, but because everybody sees musicians as entertainers these days, I think, and that makes it hard for us to exist with our mantle. People just don't believe that it's possible that a band, you know, would get better as they get older. Not financially very. We're lucky we have an American patron and who's very generous, and a lot of goodwill from people in the industry who've made their fortunes, and who agents in Australia, the guy that put on the Opera House for us. We have very significant people. There's a guy in Australia, they call, models himself on Fidel Castro in a way, who's like become the most important independent distributor for bands in Australia. He was a good friend of mine. My solo label Immersion, which Reformation's on as well, that's the band that Steve and I and Marty, Steve and me and Tim did. Have you heard the Reformation?
No, I haven't yet. I've got to get a hold of that one.
You know about it then, do you?
I do, yeah.
It's a concert, an autism awareness event, and a birthday party for our patron in Australia. Marty wasn't around, so we just performed a lot of the songs off that. The Reformation, which most church people regard as a church album now, and a very good one. Before it's a before the Hologram of Baal album, that's probably depicted the change in music, I believe.
And any more time for any solo work? I know you put out a compilation of your extensive back catalogue a few years back.
Yeah.
And any plans to do some more solo records?
Yeah, I'm going to make a concerted effort. I've been thinking about it for a long time and piecing together a direction for it. But I've been actually really developing my finger-picking guitar technique and my piano-playing technique, so that I want to make an acoustic record, you know? Kind of maybe a protest record even. The other, as you get older, you think, what have I got to say anymore? And I can't write, you know, love songs. If you have listened to the Rolling Stones' Bigger Bang, you see how undignified that sounds when a person of his age still tries to write love songs the same way as if he was younger. So, yeah, it's hard to know what to write about when you get older, although I've got plenty of opinions. I don't want to go proselytizing, but at the same time, I'd love to sort of make some statements. Like, I think Blowin' in the Wind by Bob Dylan is as important anthem now as it's ever been as well. So I'm pretty inspired. Not that I'd imagine to be that great, but I think he's a worthy influence.
This point in time is when we need more protest music, more people making music with a purpose.
Yeah, well, read my blog and see my perspective. I just have to make it more poetic for a song, I suppose.
Yeah, I did read a couple of your articles there, and it's really good to see how informed you are. And the church itself is such an international band, and it's definitely something I get from your music, is something beyond just...
That's the thing. You want to try and have something that's timeless as well, you know?
Hmm.
Yeah, you've just inspired me. You just made me realise the last missing piece to my puzzle. To maintain enough mystery for it to be timeless and not specific. Universal and timeless, not specific. Thank you.
listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
So that brings to an end part two of my special on the church here on Stranded, the Australian Canadian Music Show. Today was an interview with Peter Coppers. We broke up into four different parts, and the last section there was about the church and Peter's thoughts about the legacy of the band and their longevity. And we finished there with a Peter Coppers solo track. The track was called Arabia, and it is from Peter Coppers and the Well, his side project, from an album called Water Rights. It came out in 1995. So, thanks so much for listening, and thanks, Peter, for chatting to me. It was a real pleasure and a treat. And don't forget, Peter has a record label, Immersion Records, that you can find online. And stay tuned for next week's special that continues on the church, part three, my chat with Marty Wilson Piper. Bye for now.
Yeah.